Sean. Hey, Radcast is on.
And welcome to the show, Mr. Jim Zumbo.
Gentlemen, I am pleased to be here, and I use that term loosely when I say gentlemen.
Al Winder. Just want to welcome you to the show. Thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule to hang out with us on a podcast for a little bit.
Hey, I'm looking forward to it. There's nothing makes me happier than a cold week in Minnesota. If I can't be out fishing, I should be talking about fishing.
Hailing from Wisconsin, Jana Waller.
Thanks so much for having me.
It's Radcast. Hunting, fishing, and everything in between. Powered by Bow Spider.
Brought to you by PK Lures and High Mountain Seasonings.
And now, here's your hosts, Patrick Edwards and David Merrill.
Hello and welcome, everybody. We will have to excuse Patrick today. He is traveling, working. Like I said, him and I are two ships in the night passing each other, but we're back for another episode. We're in the great indoors, talking about the great indoor outdoors, one of my favorite things. Whether you're hunter, fisher, we got some episodes. If this is your first time listening to the podcast, join in. Sure, great, have fun. But we have season 567 episodes, so go check some of that previous stuff out, because if we refer back to some of that, you might not know what we're talking about. But we have a guest lineup all across the board. It's super exciting to be back here today. I am really privileged to have a guest in the studio. He's got his own YouTube channel, been in the industry a while. I've been watching some of his films, following along. We have Mr. Cody Robbins. Live to Hunt with Cody and Kelsey is the TV show. Welcome to the show.
I'm super excited to be here, man, and share some stories.
So we also have a guest host joining in, and he's sitting in Patrick's place. Welcome to the show, Mr. Hunter.
I'm very glad to be here. This is only my, I think it's fifth time on the show. And every time I seem to come on the podcast, it's really a fun experience for all of us sitting at this table.
Awesome. If you have any questions, just chime right in. Cody, I just want to start where we start with everybody is, how did you get into the outdoors? Bring us up to speed to today. So, little bio, short intro. Why are you sitting in this chair?
I fell in love with bow hunting when I was 12 years old, and it just kept growing every single year, hunting whitetail and mule deer in Saskatchewan, Canada. And when I was 19 years old, I got this dream that I wanted to start producing hunting videos. And I was going to produce videos, and I was going to advertise and sell them in my favorite hunting magazines. And I was thinking about Eastman's or Big Buck magazine from Canada. And so I worked two jobs. I worked a day shift and a night shift right up until hunting season. And then I quit my jobs, and I went and I bought a professional video camera. And I was hunting and filming for about a month. And I got footage of a giant whitetail buck in central Saskatchewan. Great big deer, probably in the 190s. And Jim Shockey was coming to Saskatchewan to go hunting. And I actually was sitting in the blind the night I filmed that big deer with Jim Shockey's cousin. So Jim Shockey's cousin passed on that this kid had videoed this giant buck. And Jim wanted to see the footage of this deer. So when he came to Saskatchewan, I showed him the footage of that buck. And I made him fast forward through all of my other content that I captured over that last month. And luckily for me, at the end of watching that footage, he offered me a job filming with him that fall, hunting whitetail deer. And I put my plans and my goals on hold that I had for myself, because who's going to shut down Jim Shockey if you get a chance to be his cameraman? It turned out I started Jim Shockey's show with him the next year. I was the only cameraman and editor for the first 4 years. And I worked for him for 7 years. And then in 2000, I quit working for Jim and I went out on my own, and I started a TV show called Live to Hunt. And I've been doing that show for the last 15 years. It's on Outdoor Channel in the United States on Sunday evenings next to The Crush with Lee and Tiffany. And it's on Sportsman's Channel Canada in Canada, also on Sunday evenings.
Awesome. We're going to get a little more into the filming and the history of it. But you're, so guys that watch Shockey stuff, you're the guy that was behind him holding the camera, pressing record.
Yes, I was. And it was a super cool journey. So that first year, I sat in a whitetail blind and I sat. And when you're sitting for a whitetail deer, you're sitting for 10 hours a day. You have a lot of time to talk. And Jim told me about his vision to start a hunting TV show that was a little different than the rest, where your focus was to show the viewer the hunter's point of view. So you're filming right over the shoulder, right down the barrel, right down the arrow, and share that excitement and try and make it more exciting than the cutaway type hunting when you watch filming. And I loved the idea. I didn't really have a style yet as far as filming. I knew I wanted to film hunts, but I didn't know what my style was going to be. But I really liked what he was talking about. And then a month later, after that season, he offered me a job and taught me as we went. And his show turned into one of the biggest shows on TV. And I got to travel the world with him. I hunted in 15 different countries with Jim. I got charged by elephants. I got charged by hippos. I got malaria in Cameroon and almost died. I got back to Saskatchewan and they'd never seen a case of malaria. And I was in intensive care for a week. All the different experiences that I got to take in with Jim over that 7 years, just so rare and so lucky. It was a really cool time in my life.
That is awesome. So what brings you to Landard, Wyoming today?
So I was invited to Lander to come to the MFF's, or the Mule Deer Fanatic Foundation's 10 Country Chapters 2024 Banquet. And I'm the guest speaker this evening. So I'm really excited to be here. I met these gentlemen back about a year ago in Utah at the Hunt Expo. And they invited me to be the speaker this year. And last fall, in November, they actually invited me to come and do a hunt with the Putting You in Hunt program. So I got to spend time with them on the mountain hunting mule deer last fall as well. It's like coming back and visiting old friends.
Now, that hunt was with a young gal, right?
Yes, it was. Her name was Adeline Even. And they have a program where they pick out a particular child that has an illness and they treat them to an amazing experience, a really cool hunt. Now, Blake Vagler and Rowdy Anderson reached out to me last spring after we lined up the guest speaker engagement tonight. And they said, would you have any interest in coming down and surprising Adeline and her family and filming that hunt for your show? And I already had plans, but I got thinking about my plans and thinking about the potential and how awesome that hunt could be. I canceled my own plans and I came down and joined them on that hunt and surprised Adeline and her father, Zach, and we filmed it for the Live to Hunt TV show.
So Zach's been a family friend. A hunter and Adeline played together as little kids. Zach and I have hunted together, and he's a heck of a hunterman, or heck of a hunter, heck of a fisherman, and a good artist. He's actually been on the podcast before. So,
awesome guy.
Yep, awesome guy, awesome family. It was to watch from the outside. It was really cool just to be an observer and get to participate that way. And congrats to Adeline on a great deer, and she also got to go on another trip. She got a great elk. So
she did, yeah. And what an awesome young lady. Her positive attitude and her big old smile, it just inspires you to be a strong person and be positive. And I enjoyed my time with Adeline and her family. It was so much fun.
So what is one of the most rewarding aspects of filming in the outdoor industry?
My career has been so awesome. Talking about filming, being Jim Shockey's cameraman, and then to have my own TV show, it's my dream. It's really cool to be able to look back and see old hunts. I think of the people that don't film their hunts and they have great memories. It's super cool. You have photo albums. That's one thing I think is a huge mistake in the hunting industry or in the world right now is everybody relies on their telephones to save their memories and their pictures and everything. And I'm a huge fan of hunting albums. I'm a huge fan of being in deer camp and pulling out albums and reminiscing and all that stuff. And when it comes to videos, it's really cool. When you make a living doing this and documenting every moment that you live in the wild, it's really cool to be able to go back. You tell someone a story, you can also go back and grab that footage and show them exactly what happened. And there's a lot of folks out there that don't film their hunts, which they may appreciate that because that's just their time in the field for them. But I really appreciate cool footage that you can look back on.
I have a kind of an analogy, right? And it's a little off base here, but having come from 25 years of anti-filming to now with Bow Spider, we try and do an annual film and we take and do something epic, right? Never going to be Jim Shockey. He's always been a hero and admire him, but we do need to produce something of substance, right? Content, right?
For sure.
And what I would say is think of baking your favorite dessert dish, call it apple pie, right? There's one level of if you don't film it, you just bake your apple pie, you sit down, you enjoy the whole apple pie, you really get to enjoy it. The filming is like baking an apple pie for a pie contest at a fair, right? You spend all day getting this pie ready, you're sweating over the details, you take it, you don't even get to eat the pie, right? You take it, you sit there, and you have to watch other people eat it and go, hey, did you like it? Exactly. I know I love it. And that's for me, the difference is consuming the content or producing the content for somebody else to consume. And there's a detail in there that's missed, and what it is, you touched on it. We've got four films out now, but I capture my dad's last epic mountain adventure with my brother and I. That is forever now on film. My kids, grandkids are going to sit down and watch grandpa and their dad and go, hey, they're hardcore. Look what they did.
That's special stuff.
But the flip side of that coin is when you do make a missed shot or a missed opportunity and the cameraman's there, or you're even if you're self-filming with all the cameras they have attached to bows and guns now, you have to turn the camera around and give an interview, or you have to later do a post interview of what happened. And you, at that moment, in a regular hunt, let's call it an elk hunt, if I hit a twig at 15 yards and the elk's at 35 and the arrow goes zinging off, I don't want a camera in my face saying, hey, what just happened? I just want to be a little sullen, sulk for a moment, lick my wounds, and then move on and continue hunting. And you can't do that when you're trying to document a film. That's got to be, it's integral to the story. And so it's a, in some aspects, it taints the apple pie a little bit that you got this critique piece, right, of why did you miss? And you have to, it's on film. You can't just say, oh, did happen, move on.
When you talk about it or reference it as being like someone eating the apple pie, I think people appreciate that real stuff more. When you share your misses and you share your screw-ups, they connect with you. Every one of us hunters, we've all missed. And I know there's a lot of people that produce hunting TV or hunting videos, and they don't like that stuff. They like to keep it hidden. Nobody likes it. I've missed 1,000 times on camera. And I don't like it when it happens. But when you share it with the world, people like it. They accept it. And they see that you're just another bow hunter, just like everybody else. And you get wrapped up in the moment. And with bow hunting, even if you're focused and even if you're sharp in that moment, things can happen. It's still an incredibly tough sport, and you're going to miss. And I love the people that share those tough moments that were tough to live. They're captured on camera. I love that stuff.
We did it on my Cape Buffalo film. Everybody's seen it. Yeah, I shot placement was well. We talked about the arrow, showed the arrow this morning. It just didn't penetrate. And we produced the film anyways. And I said, yeah, we had to follow it up with a rifle. I'm not the first guy that's had to do that on a Cape Buffalo.
No.
And I won't be the last. And that's one thing that I can now appreciate in hunting films is that cut flashback scene where you're facing the guy that's holding the gun. I sit there and watch and scream it to you. Cameraman's not going to be walking around while you're crawling up. I'm like, that's all BS post. I want to see it, how it happened, to maybe glean some insight on how can I do better.
Sure.
That Cape Buffalo hunt was hard. He went to Africa for about 2 weeks, and me being the big brother I am with two siblings, that was hard. Taking care of two siblings is, it's not a fun experience, I'll tell you that.
Were you the babysitter while I was hunting?
Yes. Yeah, very I was cool. The babysitter. I don't think it's very cool because they can be pain in the butt sometimes.
Your little brothers?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'm sure they
oh,
can.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Cape Buffalo hunting is the bomb. That's exciting stuff. It's cool.
So what are some of the biggest challenges when filming for an outdoor hunting TV show?
Just capturing it on camera. It's one thing to go out and be a bow hunter, being mindful of legal shooting light. You have so many people watching over your shoulder, and bow hunting, there's a lot of mental decisions that you need to make based on scruples, and you get judged by a gazillion people if you make the wrong choice. And that's one avenue you can go. And the other one is trying to capture something on film is challenging. It's one thing to have a successful bow hunt. It's another to capture it the right way on film. It takes a lot of dedication. It takes a lot of skill, and it takes a heck of a pile of luck. That's my opinion on it. You know, that first year when I started, just before I started working for Jim Shockey, I had no idea how hard it would be to capture a successful hunt on camera and get all of the shots that you need to build an entertaining video. And I've learned so much over the years. I probably take it for granted now because I've lived it for 23 years, I think, where every time we go hunting, every hunting situation is on film. So it just naturally is part of my life now. But it's, as I'm sure, it's a challenge. Every time you go out there and try and capture a hunt on camera, you're defying a lot of odds.
You are, and it's just to even be successful as a bow hunter without a second person behind you. It's, I've told people this before on this podcast. I'll say it again. Any animal with a bow, cow, doe, mule deer, is a trophy, right? And anybody that tells you different, yeah, the equipment's gotten better since you and I both first started. My first bow in 94 was not fast, was not powerful. It was lethal. And the equipment that we're hunting with today is definitely, look at the change in just the cinematography equipment you use now. The size of the drones, the GoPros, the quality, right? You're running around with this big over-the-shoulder VHS sticking tapes in there. Oh, tapes running out. Oh, batteries running out. Yeah. And the batteries are almost car batteries. And now we've got these batteries that are ice cube size, right? And gives you an hour. So even though the technology's gotten better to where, yeah, we can capture a little more of this, getting two people, a cameraman and a hunter, into position without the animal really being aware, because let's face it, if the animal's aware when you take that archery shot, it's a lot less likelihood of success than if they're unaware. Those whitetails you're hunting in that level of cold, I'm sure they can hear a rustle for hundreds of yards, right?
For sure. That's a really good point. That's probably one of the biggest challenges is there's two of you in that situation. You have double the scent, you have double the sound, and you have double the visual that you're trying to hide. That's a big part of it. And it's makes it way more challenging.
Now, I have been planning on filming and producing some videos. Almost close to my birthday, October, I got my first deer in Montana.
You, bud.
Yeah, that was a good experience. And we spent about 4 days in Montana, and I got to see a lot of really cool stuff. And it was amazing.
I would love to see pictures afterwards. That's awesome.
Oh, yeah, no problem. It's in the photo. Problems and solutions. Filming is a hard thing to do.
For sure.
You have to edit, you have to cut, you have to, it's a hard experience, and it's hard to even get that footage.
For sure.
And what makes it all worth it, you get to go on that amazing trip, go hunt those amazing animals, and I just think that's straight up cool.
Very cool.
And I'm hoping this fall that I can get an elk or maybe another deer in Montana. So.
That would be super cool. I'll be cheering for you from Canada. That would be awesome if you could.
So take us through a day in the life of, you obviously have kids, your wife's involved in the business and the filming and the hunts. So what are some things, you know, to an aspiring YouTuber out there that wants to get into doing some of this filming that they can, what are some top three tips that they need to be thinking about?
The very first tip that I give any kid that's excited to film their own hunts and they're anticipating sharing their hunting life with the world and growing their channel is I see so many people that they want to film their hunts and they want to share moments and they want to build up a great library, but they're not dedicated to their video camera. So they'll go and stalk, they'll go and climb five mountains and they'll take their camera gear on every single day climbing that mountain. And on day eight, they haven't seen anything. So they decide, you know what? I'm not going to carry that camera gear up that mountain today. And that's when something great happens. You have to be dedicated. You have to have that camera with you on your hand, ready to go at all times. And you can't be selfish in those big, exciting hunting moments. You have to turn that camera on. And instead of looking over the camera or looking with your binoculars to see how big a buck is or how big a bull elk is, you have to zoom up on them with that video camera. And you have to enjoy that animal through that camera lens. And you have to be 100% dedicated to that, and your camera being your number one focus. I've seen so many times to capture those rare moments that are going to get everyone's attention. They may happen once a year, once every 2 years. Those moments are incredibly rare. And if you're not dedicated to your camera, you're going to find out that you're going to miss those moments and you're not going to have your camera ready. So you got to have that camera with you at all times and just be dedicated. Beyond that, just be yourself when you're on camera. Be enthusiastic. Just be you. Something that I learned from Jim Shockey when I was filming for him, the very first hunt we ever filmed together, was have confidence in yourself. So we're taking photos of a whitetail buck that I shot. It was the first hunt we ever captured together. And he's taking photographs of me and I'm sitting holding that buck with a frown or a straight face. I'm just a kid. I was 19 and I'm sitting holding that deer and Jim stops and you could tell he was a little bit frustrated taking the photos. He wasn't getting what he wanted. And he said, Code, how come you're not smiling? And I've looked at all these hunting pictures over the years. It wasn't necessarily on social media at the time, but you look at hunting pictures in magazines or hunting pictures in someone's photo album. And it seemed like the thing to do to frown when you were holding a big animal, or just stand there serious or hold that deer serious. And also a second thing, I didn't have a lot of confidence in myself. I had crooked teeth. I didn't have braces yet, and I didn't like my smile. And Jim, he stopped me and he said, look, are you self-conscious of your teeth and your smile? And I said, yeah, I definitely am. I don't want to smile. I don't want to show my teeth. And he said, you know what? The most attractive thing in life is confidence. He said, you are who you are. Be proud of who you are. And that's something that I can say to you, no matter what you're doing, be proud of who you are. And if he said, did you have fun today hunting that buck with me? And I said, yeah, you're darn right I did.
The smile came on your face right then, yeah. Didn't it?
And he said, when you're 80 years old, telling your grandkid that you hunted with Jim Shockey, and that was the first year you ever shot with Jim Shockey, do you want your grandkids looking at someone frowning or smiling? And I just realized how important it was. So number one, have confidence in who you are. Believe in yourself. And when you're taking photos with an animal, or even taking photos leaning against a pickup truck and someone wants to take a picture with you or something, say you get a nice following on your YouTube channel and you get some fans, when you take a photo, have a big smile on your face and show that you're having fun. That's what I would give you.
There you guys have it. Go out, try. You're going to fail. Get up and try again. And in that filming, talking about those 8 days, with the films we've done, we've captured 30 hours of footage on a hunt, and 29.2 end up in the trash can.
Yes, sir. That's how it goes.
But the camera was on for those 30 hours, and in 1 minute and 30 or 1 minute and 60, we captured pure gold that is, you can't recreate. We have an epic encounter with a doll sheep at 3 yards on film, and 3 yards. Now, he wasn't a legal ram. We let him live, but the cameraman could have reached out and touched this sheep, and awesome. He didn't know we were there. And to be able to get to having that in a journal or writing it down, or maybe taking one photo over the shoulder of the hunter would have been cool. Hey, look how close. But we have 2 camera angles of that and the audio, and it's the opening to our sheep film. And when you go watch that, it doesn't really matter if we get a sheep or not. That part is,
for sure,
is so cool that it's, think of a mountain lion jumping on a deer. If you were, I watched one of your films and you had a big old coyote come in, and the whole time I'm like, he better shoot that coyote. And here comes your shooter buck. And I'm like, oh, I could maybe, if I put myself in your shoes sitting in the blind freezing going, okay, there's a coyote set over there at lethal range.
It's hard not to shoot.
But out the other window, I could see the nose of a buck. I'm not sure, is that my buck or not? Do I want to shoot the coyote and blow my opportunity that I just sat here 10 hours? Or shall we wait and play this out? You obviously waited and played it out, and the coyote lived, and you'll get him another day. So,
yep.
While we're on predators, something that is a little controversial, but I want to touch base on, because we've been running into this a lot in the podcast, running into it a lot just as a hunter in the industry, and to give a basis for the question, is we're seeing a lot of ballot initiatives come across in Canada and America, state by state basis, that is really pertaining to predators. And it's a ballot box initiative to ban predator hunting, whether it's brown bears, mountain lions, wolves, right? And a lot of these ballots are being approved or voted in against the advice of our wildlife management and managers and the whole North American conservation model, right? Part of it is there's been some missteps by hunters in the field taking some videos that probably are not ethical, is what I would say. What are some things, I mean, you're the guy in the industry, what are you seeing on that topic of, I don't want to get into specifics like Canada brown bears or like wolves in Colorado or mountain lions now in Colorado. We're going to come up on that soon. But the question is, how do you feel about ballot box initiative wildlife management?
I think it's incredibly disappointing when it happens. And I think it needs to remind all of us that we have a huge responsibility to not just go hunting in the fall, but to be heard. And if you can join organizations that work hard to work against things like that happening in governments, it's important stuff. I was just talking to the MFF today about how important it is to be involved with mule deer conservation, not just going and hunting them in the fall, but being involved with organizations like that, they're going to help fight against things like that. And I look at Alberta and British Columbia, who have gotten rid of, that's exactly what happened when it came to grizzly bear hunting. And now we have situations where there's tourists and campers getting smoked by grizzly bears because there's no respect. There's no hunting going on, and the grizzly bears don't have a respect for humans right now. And I would bet it will wake the people up that are making those decisions, that they aren't the right decisions. There needs to be balance in our wildlife, and we're part of that balance. I think you could see it change back sometime down the road. I don't know how many tourists it's going to take getting mauled by bears, but I would bet and I hope that it does go back at some point.
And there's so many ways to attack this, and it's so frustrating to see where you're sitting right now. You're less than 100 miles from a grizzly bear predator pit where guys like the name of Mark Upton have been mauled and killed, right? And anymore where I elk hunt, we have multiple brown bear encounters a day, and we've talked about it. The difference between our interior grizzlies right here around the GYE, the Greater Yellowstone Ecosystem, and a fish-eating true Kodiak brown bear is those Kodiak brown bears are very tolerant of other bears in their space, and they have such a plethora of caloric intake in the fall with the salmon and even in the spring with the berries. There's very little competition on that island for food for a big, mature brown bear, right? Now, there's something nobody talks about is infratricide is actually what kept that bear population pretty level, right? It was only in the 1970s and 80s when the trophy hunters showed up and wanted the big boars. Guess what the big boars were eating in the spring? They're eating cubs.
For sure.
If they couldn't find berries and they're hungry, they were running a cub down. That was what was naturally keeping the population pretty stagnant. We don't want to see these huge spikes in mountain lions, wolves, and grizzly bears, because what's going to happen? The spike goes the other way, right? We have right. These huge peaks and valleys. That's what wildlife management is. We're going to cut the top of the peak off. We're going to fill in the valley and have a much flatter plane of wildlife population.
For sure.
So with these dang bears, I read an article just last week somewhere outside of Spokane, Seattle. I can't remember which town it was in Washington. Five mountain bikers were attacked by a 90-pound lion. You know, mountain lion, and the younger 90-pound, I think it was a female cat, latched onto one of the biker's jaws for 15 minutes. They used a bicycle, rocks. They got the bike between the cat and the lady because it was using its back feet like a house cat does to scratch, right? Mm-hmm. And they called wildlife agencies and got all this in. But you look at these states that are out there banning hound hunting or banning this specific form of predator control because for some reason somebody didn't like it, when the wildlife management team that has been assembled says, hey, this is how many cats we need, but we're gonna tie both your hands behind your back and say no more trapping, no more hound hunting. Incidentally, I know with wolves, without trapping, without aerial gunning, you're never keeping a wolf population in check. You can give me 10 wolf tags in my pocket. I've been up there every year in the same area that I like to hunt, not far from here. I hear the wolves. I see the wolves. Every once in a while, another guy kills one, but I spend a lot of time archery bow hunting up there, so I'm not having 15-yard wolf encounters. There's guys that have had it and done it and piled wolves up, but when you see what a wolf does to the ungulate population, and Jim talked about this when we had him on last year, is something I never thought about. With logging roads, with all these little spike trails, we've created super highways that wolves can now run up and down game much faster than they could previous, right? They can run 30 miles down a road and they didn't have to cross a log. They didn't have to cross a stream. They just buzz right down the road and it's a Sunday afternoon jog for them. So I just wanted to get your opinion because every time I see another example of ballot box initiative, oh, we've been fighting to get these grizzly bears off the endangered species list, and it should be hailed as a champion of the Endangered Species Act worked. The grizzly bears are back. They were brought back from near extinction.
For sure.
And do I believe there's place on the landscape for the intact large carnivore guild? I do. But I don't think they should be sacred cows and protected. And then we've covered this a bunch of times, but we've got a little bit of a tangent. Yellowstone went from a lot of elk to to a little bit of elk. The wolves went from no elk or no wolves to a lot of wolves. Guys aren't paying thousands of dollars to hire an outfitter, fly out here, buy a $1,000 elk tag, buy a whole bunch of new equipment to go hunt a wolf, right? While they're here, they'll throw a $50 wolf tag in their pocket and they may take one if they get an opportunity. But very few guys are, I know there's some trap lines up in your country where guys come up and go trap wolves and hunt wolves from the States here.
For sure.
But it's not an economic driver like white-tailed deer or like a doll sheep species, right? Your ungulates are always going to be the bread and butter.
For sure.
So I can agree with that. I've been to Yellowstone multiple times, and there was, the first time I went there, about 2 years ago, there was many, many elk, like some 50 yards away from us. Now all I see is wolves. I very rarely see elk. It's saddening. Just the point of fact that they released 5 wolves into Yellowstone and now they've spread like wildfire. And Yellowstone is, it's losing its nice experience, its nice mood. It's turning into a bad place. I've been hunting many times, and my probably most memorable, whatever, I can't speak right now, is probably my first year. Probably.
When you were talking
yep,
about?
Yep. Yeah, that was the one I was talking about.
That's really cool stuff, bud.
Yep, I went down on my birthday. I had my birthday in Montana, and I got a deer about 3 days later. So I think that's just really cool. I think it's a birthday deer.
That's awesome, pal. That's super cool.
And you know what I really enjoy about Montana? You get to hunt at 10 instead of 12 here in Wyoming.
Oh, is there's a law that you can't hunt until noon?
12 years of age versus yep. 10 years of age.
Oh, okay. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's the same in Saskatchewan. You can't hunt until you're 12.
Huh.
Yep.
Yep. All we have to do is drive down to Montana. We've got a family friend, and yep, we just hang out. And
that's very lucky. That's really cool.
Now, when I did shoot my deer, I think it was a couple months before, Dad made high mountain snacking sticks out of his elk. And we did that for my deer, and they are so delicious.
That's awesome.
And it's really fun making those with Dad and having those experiences of getting that deer. It's something you'll never forget. You don't need a phone to you don't need phones. That's my point. It's, you have your own built-in camera. You have your own built-in storage system, and who needs a phone?
I get you, pal. People spend way too much time on their phones in today's day and age.
So what is one of your most memorable hunts, whether it's filmed or not?
My very first deer I ever shot with a bow and arrow was with my grandmother. She was my guardian for the fall months when I was a kid. And I had a bow and arrow. I loved archery, but I wanted to be a bow hunter. And you're not able to go hunting in Saskatchewan until you're 16 years of age. Unless you have a guardian with you. And I didn't have a guardian to take me. No one in my family hunted. I was the first one. And my 76-year-old grandmother came with me in a fancy blouse with a perm, with makeup, looking beautiful like a lady should. And she came down and laid in the shrubs and waited for a buck to walk by me. And I took that moment in for me, but she was there with me so that I could do it legally. And my grandmother was one of my very favorite humans on this earth. She's gone now, but I remember as a young teenager, that's my moments that I shared with my grandmother, whether she was a hunter or not, just showing the selflessness that she showed and the acts of kindness to let me be a bow hunter and make sure that I had a chance to be out there. I remember those hunts and I hold them very close, those memories.
And that's what we've worked very hard at on our filming, because we're not doing an episode a week, 52 a year, and trying to do a TV show. I get to have a lot more liberty with my style of filming. And yes, it is to show you that Bow Spider works in the field. And yes, Bow Spider is an integral part of funding us getting there and doing that. However, I'm looking down the road 20, 30, 40 years, like I said. what do I want to look back and see and capture, and what story do I want to tell? And this latest film that he's speaking of and speaking to that we just dropped, yeah, we kill a deer. We don't kill 295-inch world record monster title holder, right? We're eating my elk snack sticks on the hunt with him, right? And he's horseback on my shoulders, getting up at 4 a.m., doing the things, right? And we get to capture that. And what he doesn't realize yet is he's going to be 18, 20, 25, gone, grown. And I get to sit back and go, hey, I remember taking him on his first trip and getting that first deer. And you're going to get a big deer. You're always going to have your last deer. And last deer, they're sentimental. They're important. The last one you get with your dad or your grandpa or whoever. But you never get to do that first one again. And so that's something that makes this industry super special, whether it's a trip with Adeline, whether it's a trip with your own kids or your wife or your son or even your dad or the last trip you went with your grandma, right?
Yep.
And that's what the anti-hunters don't see when they see that grip and grin is, oh, you're just bloodlusty. You're happy you killed this animal. I am happy that I'm providing meat for my family. We have 3 chest freezers out here and I keep them full. And my kids know where their protein, where dinner came from. Oh, that's buffalo, or that's mountain goat, or that's your elk, or that's my whitetail. And he's had the opportunity to make high mountain seasoning snack sticks and pass them out and go, oh, this is deer I shot, I skinned, I gutted, I ground, and then I prepared in the oven, then I vacuum packed. And the pride we take as hunters doing that, and I know you've been doing it as long as anybody, right? All of that is summed up in that one photo with that smile, right?
It is.
You're not only a provider, you're not only a hunter, you're not only alive, but you are. And that's the essence. And it's hard to, for somebody who has not taken part, whether they're just an observer or a participant, if you haven't gone out and taken part in a harvest, and I'm not talking a domestic livestock in the barnyard, that's one thing. And that's still, that's a better level than, hey, I just went to the grocery store and bought some bacon, right?
For sure.
Those people at least know where, what, why. But the work when it comes into a midnight backpack out with mountain goat, right? Or with, I've had lots of 24-hour packs with elk. And when I hand you snack sticks or a chunk of backstrap or a pound of burger, the love and care and work that went into that, you can't replicate and duplicate anywhere. So speaking of wild game preparing and food, I'm curious. It's a two-part question. If we were going to go out and procure game, and you could only procure the rest of your life one game species, one weapon, what is it? And then what is your favorite way to prepare that?
I'm a big fan of elk meat. I love elk. And to me, shooting a great big elk with your bow and cooking the tenderloins over an open fire is just a ritual. It's moments in my life that I haven't forgotten. I love the taste of them. And I've been asked that question a lot, which, what wild game do you like the most? And I would have to say it's got to be elk for sure.
And your favorite way to prepare it?
I love elk steaks. I love elk roasts, as long as they're cooked properly. But I also love different flavored sticks, like meat sticks. We have different beer sticks, honey garlic beer sticks, stuff like that. I'm always chewing on them. All fall I have those snack sticks with me, so that's probably my fave.
Perfect. That's, well, like I said, we use high mountain seasoning and make all sorts of snack sticks. We've done videos and guys ask me, do you really like the stuff? They've got like 200 flavors of seasoning to go from burger to sausages to brats to snack sticks to whatever in between. The product I like is the whole muscle jerky. That's pretty easy. Just slice it, brine it, and then you smoke it, right? And they have, in their instructions, they have package and tips. The ones the kids really like is we take burger and we make ground meat sticks. And they got a jerky shooter. It comes out a quarter inch wide, inch long. And they will eat 3 pounds of that in a sitting if you let them. I'm like, guys, this is eat one and then go do something, not just consume 12 of them.
Live on it, yeah.
Speak to some challenges in taking kids specifically on their first hunts, hunting. What are some things above and beyond? Because we've talked about bow hunting's hard, filming bow hunting's hard. Filming bow hunting with kids is hard, right? So what are some things to think about when you're taking that 16-year-old kid on his first deer hunt, or taking one of your kids or whoever you are taking? What are some things that can help make that a better adventure?
Something that I have learned along the way is you need to remember that it's their hunt. You need to be more patient. You need to be be more accommodating. One time I was sitting in a blind and I was hunting with one of my best friend's girlfriends, and he ended up marrying the lady. Now we're sitting in the blind and I'm waiting for a 150 class whitetail buck to show up. And this is her first time hunting. And a little spiker, a little yearling whitetail shows up and he's running around and rubbing his antlers and chasing some does around. And I look over at her and she's breathing hard and she's got buck fever. She's like, when can I take the safety off? And I'm like, oh, we're not shooting that deer. We're waiting for a bigger one. And she's like, oh, why are we waiting? And I remember saying, oh, that's because that's not the buck we're after. And I looked out the window on my side of the blind and just forgot about it for a bit. And I got thinking about it. I was like, what, why do I have the right to decide for her what she wants to go after or what she wants to accomplish? Or, and I looked back at her, she was crushed. She was completely deflated that I took that away from her. And I looked back at her and I said, would you like to shoot that deer? He was still out in front of us. And she's, are you kidding me? I can't believe we're not shooting that deer. I want to shoot that deer. And within 20 seconds, I was shaking as bad as she was. And we're talking about a yearling whitetail buck. When I'd lived so many moments in the wild with whitetail deer, it took a pretty big deer to give me buck fever. And all of a sudden, I was tied up in that moment just like she was. And what I took away from that was, don't make it about you. It's about that child or about that newcomer to hunting. Keep an open mind and support them and give them guidance when they need it. But let it be about them and about their goals and what they want to accomplish. And that's one thing I've really tried to be conscious of every time I take kids hunting right now. That's a guideline that I follow.
That is awesome, because that's part of this latest film that will be coming out is this young man over here. We're on a whitetail buck, and the does had come to the field that we're sitting on, and we're in central Montana. We're not tree stand hunting, and it's 1,500, 2,000-yard visibility, but we're over watching a pretty good creek bottom with an alfalfa field below us, and the buck he ends up harvesting rebeds because the does bumped him a little bit, and we watched him for about an hour, and I knew there was a much, much bigger whitetail buck in there, and so did the rancher, and I turned to him. I finally said, hey, you want that buck? We've been digiscope phone scoping him for a while and chatting back and forth and doing some video work. And he goes, yeah, we stalked into 40 yards and he made a phenomenal shot with a suppressed 6.5 Creedmoor at 88 yards on the run.
Nice.
But we didn't lay there at 660 and have him on the scope. We stalked into, and I could, when we get the film done, we had to traverse 40 yards and I'm dragging him and he's now lost a little bit of the interest. I can show him an antler at 40 yards. He's like, yeah, it's an antler, whatever.
Yeah.
And he's over here picking daisies and all of a sudden the deer stands up and I yank him to the side. I almost yanked his head off and I'm like, get on this gun right now. And he made a shot, one shot, deer was down 20 yards later and we got four guys hooping and hollering, and it's a stud whitetail. It's for sure. It's a dream whitetail for anybody. I think it scores 140 150.
Awesome.
It's a great first deer, but it wasn't the 210 that was walking around down there. Yeah. That's, and yes, private land is a whole different world, and people that don't think that we have big whitetails out here in the West, oh, okay, sure, they, Wyoming, they always say a little whitetails, and yeah, you're gonna look at 100 inch whitetails before you see something bigger. But we do have a few 200s walking around, but they have to find a hidey hole and make it to be
sure.
Ripe old 8, 9 years old. They're not getting to be 200 inches at 3.5, 4 in Wyoming. We got pretty poor feed. It's been great just getting to know who, what, more, why, how. Really, honestly, what are some things in the future that's coming up? What are some goals in the pipeline, kind of bucket list stuff that you're looking at that we can be following along and seeing?
So we've been working on a project the last 10 years, and it's documenting one man's dream to buy his own land, not have it handed down from his parents, but find a way to buy his own hunting land and enjoy the full-time whitetail hunting lifestyle. You know, just, you know, shed hunting in the spring, scouting in the summer, setting up trail cams, building food plots, watching deer grow, making lists of call bucks, making lists of buck that should be protected. Just going through the entire process. I'm a mule deer guy, I'm an elk guy, I'm a moose guy, but I feel like white-tailed deer is the one species, probably across the board, across North America as a whole, it's probably the most popular deer or the most popular first deer anybody's ever going to hunt. And a lot of times it's the first deer you're going to shoot, and the last year you're going to shoot. If you're 80 years old and your son or your grandson or granddaughter take you hunting when you're a lot older human, it's going to be the animal that you maybe close out your hunting career on. So white-tailed deer have held a, you know, very near and dear to my heart. I love the process, not necessarily just going and sitting and shooting a deer, but the whole entire process that comes with white-tailed deer. And we're releasing a video this September that's called The Rafter 7. And it documents my dream to one day own my own private land and just live that whitetail lifestyle. And I set a goal for myself right out of the gate. I wanted to try and shoot a 200-inch whitetail with my bow and arrow. And it wasn't that a whitetail deer had to score 200 inches for me to be proud of it. I maybe think it was maybe unintentionally setting the bar so high that it may never happen, because I believe that anticipation in hunting a lot of the times is the greatest thing. I'm not saying realization isn't as good, but the anticipation and having a hope or a dream and shooting for it is fun, even if that process lasts forever. But I ended up getting a big whitetail buck with my bow this past fall, and he scored 204 inches. So we're releasing the story, and it's about a two-hour movie, actually, documenting that 10 years fencing the land, ranching cattle on the land, trying to find a way to pay the mortgage on that land, and watching young deer coming up, looking awesome, being excited about them, the neighbors shooting them and them showing up on a Facebook page, or coyotes killing them in the wintertime, and going all the way through until one of those special deer survives and makes it to 7 years old, and then I get a chance with my bow and arrow. So it's a story we're releasing this summer that I'm really excited about, and it's called The Rafter 7.
Awesome. Thanks for sharing that. While you were talking, some of the things that came to mind was, you are correct, and there's been a little bit of a paradigm shift in whitetail hunting. Was the farmers and ranchers' sons went out for opening weekend after working all summer plowing, when they're like, oh, I've been seeing this one buck in the corner in the mornings, and I'm going to take the 30-30 down there, 1960 style. And if you back up a little further, all those whitetail were almost extinct pre-Pittman-Robertson Act, pre-North American Wildlife Model and Conservation. So to see those whitetail come back and then to see them harvestable, and that there is some nostalgia in Grandpa's 30-30 that he hunted deer with in the 50s and 60s and 70s, right? But the other piece that you talk about, and it's shifted. You used to be able to go knock on the door, some old ranch, be like, oh, you got a kid. Yeah, go shoot a deer, whatever deer. And I'm not against and opposed to managing for inches and naming bucks on trail cam. And I do, having history with elk, right? Now it's a lot harder. It's a lot harder. We don't have trail cam images, but if you can pick up a shed and miss a big bull and then, okay, oh, he's back in here, I spotted him. And if you get it, if you're lucky enough to get a chance to hunt an area year over year, and hey, there's been this big 400-inch bull we're looking at for 3 years, and somebody finally gets him, it's cool to have those stories. It's,
for sure.
It's grumpy old men. There was always that huge fish in the lake, right?
Yeah.
They never did catch it. They had him on a few times. I don't even remember the nickname for him. But sometimes those big old swamp donkeys get a reputation, right? There's mule deer bucks here in the States, that Popeye and some of these others that we're going to see tonight. It's going to be good time over there, but some of those deer, they're living legends. They take on a reputation of their own. As, oh, I saw this 300-inch monster over here with double droppers that are 8 inches. That's just deer that most guys are lucky to harvest a 4-point muley. I've got a few out there on the wall, but nothing like,
right.
And my dream and goal is to get one of those as well. So it's cool. I'm excited to see that journey and transition, because, you know, our little piece here, we've killed pheasants on, and it is really neat to, you know, get up, and I know a lot of people in this country don't get to get up, look out their back window over their crop, and yep. we've done pigs, and we got chickens, and my horses that are out there, that this property exists, and the horses exist so that I can go elk hunting, right? That's
for sure.
That was the dream, was live out west after moving from Alaska to go kill elk horseback, and I would say that I'm starting to check that off. I just need one more, but I say that every year, Cody.
Good for you, man.
So we're going to continue to follow along and see how the journey expands, and we'll definitely check some more of those films out. I think Hunter's got a question over there.
Okay.
You know, it's been a pleasure talking with you, because it's cool to actually meet another hunter who is in the industry of YouTube and Instagram.
It's been an honor to be here with you, pal.
Well, thank you.
I think I've always admired how you can bring total strangers together, just like us right now, and you get talking hunting, and you guys, you connect. There's a very quick, rapid friendship because of the passion that you share in hunting, and I really appreciate that, and I enjoyed meeting you today.
I did too.
So how can people get in touch, stay in tune? How can they get a hold of you? If they, where should they follow along and find all this stuff?
So we're very active on our Instagram and our Facebook, and it's Live to Hunt with Cody and Kelsey. That's my wife and I. We're the co-hosts of the Live to Hunt TV show. And we also have a YouTube channel called Live to Hunt with Cody and Kelsey. And we post new stories on that YouTube channel probably but once a month.
It's a little too late if they want to come by and meet you tonight, because the Mule Deer Fanatic Banquet is sold out like normal, and it's going to be a great time, and it's a good cause for a good group of guys, and they do a lot of boots on the ground work that honestly I don't have the time for, but I really appreciate and I love that I can go support them with whatever means that you have, and so I'm thankful that you're here to support them and help out. I've been attending for a decade now, and I tell everybody this, Alaska has my heart, but Wyoming has my soul. I cut my teeth killing blacktail, and if you think whitetail are hard, go try a blacktail.
I want to someday, man. You know what? They really intrigue me. They're beautiful little deer. They're awesome.
And a lot of people don't know, but the current world record is 216 inches.
A blacktail?
Oh, yeah.
What? Did it come out of Oregon?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
I shot it. Now, Sitka, yeah, you're going to shoot an 80-inch deer, and you're going to be happy about it. Guys that are consistently and routinely killing some of those big deer, it is very close and near and dear to my heart, but Wyoming has my soul, and I'm transitioning from an elk guy to a mule deer guy. All I wanted at his age, when being a kid, was to kill a 300-inch bull elk with my bow. I have done that, and some. I'm done chasing inches. I just chase experience. And if I'm excited, I'm more excited that he's eligible to hunt elk this year. So
wow,
we're going to do a rifle elk hunt, and we're going to be looking for any bull, right?
Yeah, I'm excited for you guys, and I wish you luck.
Okay, guys, that's been another episode. Again, tonight, Cody's going to be there at the Muley Fanatic Foundation Banquet in Lander. We'll be in attendance, so we'll look forward to hearing you speak there. And he's told you where to get a hold of him. So until next time, guys, this has been Radcast. You please go follow, subscribe, share, check out High Mountain Seasoning, check out Radcast online. We have YouTube shorts now. And then give a PK a shout out for sure. If you're doing any kind of ice water, fresh water, taking the kids fishing, we've talked about it. We've had the guys on. Certainly PK's got a whole new lineup of a bunch of new lures. Whether you're hard water or open water like I like, definitely check their stuff out. We didn't get much into fishing because I wanted to talk YouTube and hunting. I can do that. I'm the host. All right, guys. This has been Radcast.
Thanks again for listening to the Radcast Outdoors podcast. We hope that you've enjoyed the show. If so, please go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Carbon TV, YouTube, or wherever you're listening to this podcast and subscribe, share, and give us a 5-star rating, which helps other people find the show. You can find all of our shows, recipes, giveaways, videos, and much more at radcastoutdoors.com. Please don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Instagram. We also have a Radcast community on Facebook called Radcast Nation. We'd love for you to join in the conversation there. And of course, please help support our sponsors who make this show possible. Thanks again to PK Lures, Bow Spider, and High Mountain Seasonings. Until next time, get out there and enjoy the outdoors.